Thank you, Pat, for inviting me. It's a great pleasure, an honor, a privilege to speak to you here. The Jewish Museum is really a gem on the Upper East Side in New York City, and I live nearby, and I come by here quite a lot. And yes, I'm originally from Israel. I'm also American. I've lived here since 1981. And yes, I have my feet in more than one world. Pat introduced me as an astrologer. Yes, I'm a professional astrologer, certified, etc. I'm not going to promote my wares now, but you can get more information about me later on if you want to. I've been doing astrology since 1978. Parallel to astrology, I've had a long career in computer field. So I have my brain and my feet in more than one world. Right now, I'm completely dedicated to astrology. I practice with individuals, like you said, like you asked me. I teach it. I lecture a lot on it. I at conferences and so on in my world, in my universe of astrology. And I write, and I have translated into English, published the astrological texts of Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra. I will say more about him later. I hope I have enough time. I'll try to engage you so you will not be running out the door after a while. So let me tell you the whole story. But I just wanted to introduce myself a little bit. I also have grandchildren, like many here, so we share a common Jewish experience. I'm sure of that. So let me start. The lead that Pat had with the article on Saturn and the discussion we had earlier at the table about watching the stars in the heaven was so appropriate. And someone even asked me, how did you even get into that? So we all have our different ways of getting into this field of knowledge. But eventually, when you get into it, it's like you died and went to heaven. I can tell you that. It's an incredible field of knowledge. Astrology is a discipline of knowledge. It's not hokey pokey, it's knowledge, which began in ancient Babylonia and survived through various historic periods and cultures from the Middle East through the medieval Europe, the Renaissance, all the way to our time. Very ancient. Throughout history, it has captivated the minds of common people and scholars alike, and raised heated discussions among philosophers, mystics, and theologians. Astrology also had an impact among the Jews from Talmudic time on, up until today. It had a role in the development of a Kabbalah and became prominent in the Golden Age in Spain. Today I will attempt to give you some idea what astrology is all about. Particular attention will be given to the attitude of Judaism towards astrology. Hopefully, I'll have enough time for all this. So first, let me define the word itself, the topic, and describe it a little bit better. Astrology is a discipline of knowledge which studies the connection between heaven and earth. Keyword is connection. Astrology is all around us in language and in culture. For instance, the zodiac is painted on the ceiling of Grand Central Station. If you care to look up, you will see that. The big hole. The facade outside, the facade of Grand Central Station depicts the image or the statue of Mercury. Mercury was the messenger of the gods in ancient cultures and a symbol of transportation and travel in astrology, very appropriate for a train station. The founding fathers of this country were Freemasons, and they knew astrology, and there is also a theory that the architecture of Washington, D.C. contains astrological symbolism, the architecture, the layout of the city, and in numerous places. Here's something more closer to home. Astrology is abundant in Jewish language and idioms. Idioms that we all use and we don't even notice that we are actually saying something astrological, such as, when you say the word mazel tov, or at a wedding you say, or you sing it rather, siman tov mazel tov, you're speaking astrology. When you say to someone in Hebrew, b'sha'a tova, meaning may it happen when it start in a good time, like being successful, b'sha'a tova, you're speaking astrology. When you call someone Shlimazel, you're speaking astrology, because Shlimazel means someone with no muzzle, with no mazal. That's Shlimazel. When you bless someone, may you live to 120, you're using an astrological concept without you knowing about it. When you use the phrase, which some people may be familiar with, or like an aphorism, and that is in Hebrew, Meshane Makom, Meshane Mazal, meaning when you change your location, you move to another location, you're changing your mazal, your muzzle, meaning your luck. For now, I will use the word mazal as the translation for the word luck, but later on I will define it a little bit better. So right now, that's what it means. But in all these phrases, the mazal or the muzzle means like a general, your fortune in life. When you look at the mosaic floor, which we have a beautiful reproduction here, you're looking at astrology. These mosaic floors are found not only in Beit Alpha Synagogue, they're found in En Gedi Synagogue near Masada, in Sepphoris in the Galilee, and if you go to the Lower East Side, to the Stanton Street Synagogue, and you look up a little bit around the top of the wall, you'll see the zodiac depicted there also. Someone from my synagogue, from Or Zeruah, took me there and showed it to me. So it's prevalent. It's all around us. Zodiac symbolism are used to illustrate ketubas. This is a traditional illustration for ketubas for a wedding. Astrological concepts are hidden in our daily prayers, in the Siddur. So many of the prayers contain astrological or cosmological allusion, and you can say it or without even noticing it. The Talmudic rabbis discussed astrology and mysticism. They did. Astrology is found in biblical commentary throughout the centuries. Text related to astrology is found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Not much, a very short segment, but enough to indicate that that was also part of their mental horizon. Astrology and cosmology are the basis of Kabbalah, as I said, and also the backbone of this, of a famous book, which you may not be familiar with. It's called Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation. It's a mystical book, which not too many people know about. As a matter of fact, Judaism, and this is what I like to say, Judaism retained and preserved astrological knowledge and esoteric wisdom more than any other ancient tradition, honestly. When you really build up this whole body of instances, it's amazing, because you don't find it in any of the others, not in Christianity. I'm talking about the monotheistic religion, not in Christianity and in Islam. Judaism has it mentioned all over in many places. The famous scholar Gershon Scholem wrote a very well-known book called Major Trends in Jewish Mysticism. And in his introduction to that book, he points out that mysticism and mystics ran throughout history, they ran parallel to mainstream religion. Mainstream religion is what we do in the synagogue, the service and all that, and the observance of the mitzvot and the holidays. This is mainstream. And Scholem points out how all these this esoteric knowledge was always there parallel throughout history, from ancient times to this day. I have one problem with Scholem. He doesn't mention astrology at all, as if it never existed, and I think he did it deliberately, because it's not possible to look at all these things that he researched and not see that astrology was part and parcel of these. But it was his choice. Still great read. He's unbelievable. He was the scholar of Kabbalah. He started the Kabbalah as a field of study. Until his time, it was not even considered as worthy of study. For scholars, I mean, for university scholars. Anyway, back to astrology. Now, many people have heard the word horoscope. It's a common word. Most people think of it as the daily column that they read in the newspapers and magazines. Most people think of it as something related to calendar. So based on a certain date you're born, you say, well, I'm a Capricorn, I'm this, I'm that. So you think of the date. It's not date related. One more common misconception. Astrology is usually lumped together with psychics, tarot reading, and palmistry. However, astrology is none of the above. It has nothing to do with all of these. It's completely different. And as Pat led into this talk, it has to do with the stars. The word astrology contains the word astro, which is a star, and logos, which is knowledge. It's the knowledge of the stars. And the astrologer, based on a date and the exact moment of birth, and I repeat, exact moment of birth, and the specific location of birth, the astrologer will prepare what we call a chart. And most people still call it a horoscope, but it's a chart. I will use the word chart. You have an example of that, and I'll on the page, the top left. That's an example of a chart, an astrological, a birth chart. So this chart can be defined as, so I'm trying to describe that circle that you're looking at. I'm telling you in a couple of sentences what it represents. Think of the circle in the center as if it's the Earth. That circle, that blank circle. Think of it as the Earth. And you're standing on Earth, or you're born on Earth, and you're looking out. And you're looking at that huge space sphere around you. And that sphere contains the zodiac and the planets. So the whole view of astrology is from the Earth's point of view. And I call it from the subjective point of view, the way you see the world, not objective. So we're here, and we look out, and we see the universe around us. The zodiac, the word zodiac, is not just an abstract thing somewhere in space. It's a very specific circle around the Earth. That circle is the path of the sun. If you look at the sun every day, if the sky is blue, you cannot see anything, but that path of the sun, that's the zodiac. It's not over there, it's not over there, it's like a circle around us. It's a specific location in the heavens, and it's a circle. That circle is divided into 12 sections, and you're very familiar with the names of those sections, because these are the signs of the zodiac. 12 sections, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc. These are the 12 sections of that wheel. So it's a physical thing. It's specific. It's not psychic. Another division of this round sphere around us is called houses, and you can see that wheel, that circle on a page has 12 sections. These 12 sections are the houses. And then the astrologer looks some more and marks in all these sections, marks the location of the planet where they are found on that day, at the moment, per this location. In other words, the chart becomes like a snapshot, as if you took a camera and took a picture of what it looks like around you at a given moment. Now, normally we think of this chart as a birth chart of a person, but I have to tell you that we do, in astrology, we do these charts, not just for individual people, but also for larger entities, such as the birth of a nation, such as the State of Israel, which we are celebrating today. Every entity that is born, every entity that has a specific start moment, a start time, it starts, it's a starting point, has an astrological chart. It's as if that moment, every moment is rich with energies and with complexities. And the entity that comes into being at that moment almost like is stamped by that energy. And that stamp is that astrological chart. And that stamp is carried around throughout life. And it's true for a person, it's true for a country, it's true for a company that you start, for a business, it's true for marriage. I sometimes do marriage charts, like a good time to get married. And that is so incredible. It captures something, the essence of the moment, and it's stamped and it's carried on into the future. So that's the short description of that wheel. What the astrologer can do with that is a lot. The astrologer can analyze, this creates a very complex system, which you cannot appreciate just from that wheel, because a lot goes into the analysis of that one, which is not appropriate for here, because I'm not teaching how to do that. But that complexity allows the astrologer to see a lot of information about life. character, personality, intellect, potential, talents, relationships, health, money, career, work, children, parents, home life, you name it, travel, you name it, it's there. It's only a matter of how good the astrologer is in the craft. It's a craft. And it's only a matter of skill, how to get all these things. So astrology allows us to see this as a picture for life, but also for the future. And that's where the complication begins. My phrase here that it is that it allows us to look into the future and prepare for it. The question is, what do you mean by prepare? But I have a limited amount of time here, so let me just keep going. I really do want to do justice to all those topics that I really want to tell you today. I want to take you through a journey. It's a real journey, and I want you to share my excitement about it. So let me tell you a little bit how it all started. Reading the sky is an ancient preoccupation of human race. Preoccupation. Everybody wants to know what's going to happen, no matter where and when in history. It is found in all cultures throughout history. Early on, as human consciousness and intellect evolved, the desire to explain why things are and tell what's going to happen became all-consuming. Omens developed when people found correlation between human life and signs in nature. Those were the famous omens. Then people started looking upward towards the stars in the heaven, not just nature around, but starting looking up, and began to notice patterns of planetary movements and unique celestial phenomena such as eclipses and comets. The cycles of the sun and the moon were obvious things to observe, and the sun and the moon gave rise to our calendars. You probably know that very well. The Jewish calendar follows the Babylonian lunar calendar, which is based on the lunar cycle, and the definition of the month is from one new moon to the next new moon. And this is our Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is a new moon, and in our calendar, which is actually the Babylonian calendar. The civil calendar is a solar based on the motions of the sun, or the annual cycle of the sun. The days of the week, in Hebrew, they're just called Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, they're called by the number, but in other languages, they have a name, and they're named after planets. They're named after the seven days in the week, seven visible planets, visible being up to Saturn, that Tad mentioned, because nowadays we know of other planets that are not visible with the naked eye, you need telescopes and so on. But up to Saturn, the planets are visible, and these are the 7 days in the week. The number seven is based on the planets. It comes from the planets. Apropos, I cannot resist not talking about it, Shabbat. Shabbat and the planet Saturn, in Hebrew, Shabtai, is the same thing. It's the same concept. On Shabbat, we cease all activity, no work. The planet Saturn always says the same thing in the astrological context. When you have a Saturn effect in your chart, you don't work, or something happens at work, or something, meaning there's a cessation of activity. It slows down, it blocks, and things like that. So Shabbat and Shabtai are the same thing. And incidentally, the planet Saturn is considered to rule the Jewish nation, but that's a whole other discussion. So there are connections with the names of the planets and the names of the days in the week. Eventually, people began to observe correlations between the celestial phenomena and the planetary cycles and human affairs here on Earth. Notice the correlation. And this became encapsulated in the famous phrase, which is quite famous, as above, so below. Many people have heard that. Can I see a nod? As above, so below. Very well-known phrase among people who are mystics. And all this started in Babylonia 4,000 years ago, approximately, in Babylonia. Not here, not now. And this knowledge, I'll abbreviate here a little bit, was transmitted from Babylonia further into the world. So the ancient Babylonians started these observations They created these tables and tables of the lunar and solar eclipses because they were mathematically, they were able to calculate not only what they have seen already, but what when the next one will come. That demands a lot of intellect and mathematical ability. So they started it. And that spread also into Persia. And then came Alexander the Great and the Hellenistic Empire, the Greek Empire. And Alexander the Great conquered the whole Middle East and actually reached into northern India. And that allowed a lot of transmission of knowledge and culture and cross-fertilization across all these lands. And make a long story short, the knowledge of astrology traveled from Babylonia to Greece and to Egypt. The most important is Egypt. You see, we can never get too far away from Egypt, no matter what, in biblical times and in astrology. In Egypt, it blended with found fertile grounds. It blended with a native tradition, esoteric tradition that they had. And it took up the intellectual world in a storm. And you're talking now about 300, 200 BCE. That's the era when astrology began to blossom. And it really evolved between the Hellenistic culture and the Greek knowledge, you know, and the Babylonian tradition. It really took off. And the astrology that we study and practice to this day is rooted in that. Not much has changed since then because the planets have not changed. So we have very, very ancient roots. The Jews, by that time, you're talking now the destruction of the first temple, then the destruction of the second temple. The Jews are back in Babylonia twice, after the first temple and big time after the second temple. Babylonia was the cradle of this whole knowledge. And the Jews were what I call in their time and of their time. They knew everything that was going on. They were not isolated and insulated. They were very interested in all these fields of knowledge. And they picked it up also with a vengeance, in my opinion. They loved it. Because it was in the environment. And I say that no one was immune from the seduction. It's just seductive stuff. No one was immune from this new science. Another thing is that era, that period, historical period, was rife with new religious fervor, rebellious ideas such as Gnosticism and Neoplatonism. And that combined also with influences from India because of Alexander the Great that brought from India, from the Far East, all these concepts of reincarnation and the immortality of the soul. So it all blended together and found a home in this whole world of mysticism and astrology. In that era, people were looking for transcendental, deeper and personal experience of connection with the divine, and this is very real. We have two Talmudic instances that really tell us, and the Talmud is very brief and cryptic on that because it was what I call dangerous knowledge. One of my lecture, in parenthesis, which I did a few years ago, and I have it on tape, I call it forbidden knowledge. And some more stuff, but it was forbidden knowledge. The Talmud is very cryptic on that. And one of these is very well known among people who read these things. It's called Ma'aseh Merkava. Ma'aseh Merkava means how the heavens are put together. And the other one is about the four sages, or four people, four men who entered the Pardes. Pardes is a play on words, because Pardes in plain language means an orchard or a grove, but it's also an acronym for Pshat, Remez, Drash, Sod, for the words, which means the four levels of esoteric knowledge. When you look at something, you have the simple level, then the hidden level, and then the highest mystical level. So it's a very, very involved story in the Talmud as an example of how people are really craving the individual experience. It's not enough to read about it in a book, you want to feel it. The way the prophet Ezekiel had that vision as a personal experience. Also, these were the times when people formed spiritual sects, such as the Essenes and the Judean desert, and we all know about the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I mentioned earlier that it contains a mention of astrology. These are examples of people looking for a new religious experience. Not enough to make the sacrifices in the temple. That was not enough. They needed personal experience. Now you have two pictures on my handout which kind of capture that. One of the picture is it's a medieval rendition of what I mentioned about the prophet Ezekiel. That's right under the chart. You can see a person looking into the heavens. That's the top picture. And that is the rendition of what Ezekiel said that he saw in his vision. The four wheels, the four animals, and God sitting on a throne. I can give you a whole lecture on that, but how it's actually historical, but that's not the purpose. The picture below that is the medieval picture that shows how people are really craving to break the veil, to look beyond and see how it all, what's really the mysteries of the universe. In the 7th century, the Arabs conquered the Middle East. They took over everything. They took over the Hellenistic studies, philosophy, astrology, and they ran with that also, and they developed it also in the Arabic period. There were two astrologers which were Jewish as well during the Arabic period, and this was, to make a long story short, transmitted into Spain, where the Jews lived under the Muslim rule. And again, astrology found an intellectual home among the Jews in Spain. And that really began a whole new cycle of interest in astrology. The most famous name from that era is Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra, my favorite. He was a great biblical commentator, studied to this day. He wrote about many things. One of these things was astrology, and he wrote a whole encyclopedia, a huge amount of writing only on astrology. Just to give you an example, that it was not forbidden and it was not a no-no. It was not forbidden at all. So that's how we get to Ibn Ezra, and Ibn Ezra lived in the 12th century in Spain. Now, in biblical times, take it a little bit step back, in biblical times, astrology was more identified with idolatry. It was kind of one and the same, and the prophet really gave the people, admonished the people for that. Idolatry is not astrology, because idolatry means that you worship a piece of wood or a statue, and you think that it has autonomous powers. But astrology never claims that. Astrology never says that the stars have a power of their own. Never. The stars or the planets are like messengers or indicators of a higher power. That's pure and clear. So that's the biblical time. But in the Talmudic time, it gets a lot more sophisticated. That's when the shift occurs. When the Jews really found discovered astrology as we know it now. So in the Talmud, we find astrological statements that deal with people's characters, with personal situations, and even, very intriguingly, with legal situations. Where astrology or astrological condition have an legal implication. Very interested. Now, the real issue in this whole thing was the question whether astrology is valid at all, the validity of it, is it valid? And the following questions are, how much free will do we have? Is it all fated? Or are we totally bound by the laws of nature and the stars? And on top of that, if it's really so, then what's the value of being righteous, of keeping the mitzvot, and saying the prayers, and so on? So, if it's all predestined? That was the big question that they all wrestled with. And incidentally, nobody has a clear answer to this day. So I can leave you, I'm not leaving you yet, but I can interim leaving you with a statement that up to you. You can decide. It's up to you to decide. I'm not going to give you my answer now. But basically, these are the big questions, and there are various opinions, really diverse opinions among the Talmudic rabbis on these questions. Some rejected it completely, meaning they rejected the astrological concept. Some accepted it in its totality. And others said, yes, but we have a way out. And these are very distinct opinions. Nowadays, if you ask any religious person, you will invariably hear the phrase, Ein Mazal LeYisrael. Israel is the Jewish nation, and it means the Jewish people are not ruled by the stars. They're not subject to the influence of the stars. Why? Because we have a direct connection to God, and we're protected by the Torah. So there are three phrases. That was one of them. Ein Mazal LeYisrael. That represents one opinion. The other one says Hakol Tzafui VeHarashut Netuna, meaning everything is foreseen. You can see it already. All possibilities are already in place. Everything is already arranged in the future. Choices A, B, C, D, they're all there. But the permission to choose is given. So we're given permission to choose which one. And that choice is a moral prerogative, a moral question, or ethical question. So this is kind of halfway between saying, yes, everything is already, the future is already known, but then we have permission to choose, or we must choose. And then it goes even further, and then another phrase says, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyirat shamayim, in other words, the heavens control everything. But the word heaven is kind of loaded because it can mean God, it can mean the heavens in Hebrew. But I'll say, generally speaking, everything is in the hands of the heaven except for the fear of the heavens. Fear of the heavens in Hebrew, Yirat Shamayim, which means being devout and being a good religious person. So that's the general attitude, general sampling of the general attitude. Now, I can give you some samples of these, and I would like to do that if I haven't lost you. I think most of you are with me. One or two. Oh boy, that's a tough choice. Okay. So I already mentioned Ein Mazal LeYisrael, Rabbi Hanina. It's all Talmudic quotes, and you have them. And incidentally, the purpose of the handout is that even if you cannot read it, maybe you take it home, maybe someone else wants to enjoy this and see what I was sampling. Anyway, Rabbi Hanina, that's number two, it says, Mazal Machkir, Mazal Ashir. Mazal makes one intelligent, Mazal makes one rich, and Mazal, and Israel does have Mazal. Categorically, that's a Talmudic rabbi. Israel, in other words, we are not exempt. Nobody is exempt. And then there's another story that gives an example. It's all in the Talmud. That's number three on your handout. They tell a story about two men, both wise, both righteous, both observing the mitzvot, and then they say, well, one was rich, one was poor. One lived to be 92, one died at age 40. One had 60 festivities in his home, the other one had 60 deaths in his home. One gave rich food to the dogs, and the other house couldn't have one slice of bread. In other words, the fact that they were both righteous didn't make any difference. That's an extreme example of how it's all dependent on mazal. I want to say a word about mazal because I may not have the time later. The word mazal is luck in modern Hebrew. It's also the word for the astrological sign, like the Aries and the Taurus and so on. But in the Talmudic context and in rabbinical writing in general, since those days up until now, the word mazal is actually a reference to the whole configuration or constellation under which you're born, in other words, that wheel that you have on the paper. That whole configuration of under which you're born is usually referred to as mazal. So it's not just the sign of one sign of the zodiac, but this whole configuration. And incidentally, the chart that you're looking at, that wheel, is of Maimonides, Rambam. I decided to have fun and put his chart. I'm not going to interpret it, but it's a great chart, and I have spoken on it a number of times, but not now. So this is an example. You're looking at Maimonides, actually, on that paper. So that's mazal. Mazal is the whole constellation of the heavens under which you're born at that moment and place and so on. And then someone says, even more extremely, a person does not even lift a finger unless it has been announced from above. In other words, the most trivial event in life, it's all from heaven. Then we have a question of personal freedom that and ethical choice, and I mentioned it already, and it all depends on righteousness and doing the right thing. The legal implications are very interesting because the whole Talmud is about legal discussions. How does that affect legal questions? Example is, believe it or not, a woman who is supposed to get married, and there's a date set, and then the wedding is delayed for some reason. But according to the Jewish law, from that point on, from the wedding on, the man is responsible for her sustenance, for her upkeep, provide her needs from as soon as she becomes the wife. Now the wedding is delayed, and then the woman says, you have to start paying, even though we haven't been married yet, because it's your mazal. It's your mazal who caused the delay. So it's not my responsibility. It's your mazal. You pay. The same interesting situation, similar situation is in questions of leasing a field, and then for the purpose of growing some crops, and then there's drought or flood and nothing grows, and then the person who was rented the field says, I have no money to pay for my debt. And then the question is, who's responsible? Whose mazal caused the bad situation? And again, I'm making a long, very long story, very short here. The conclusion is that if that affliction, the flood, whatever, the drought, happened for everybody, and a good analogy is what happens now with the airlines. It happens to everybody. Who's supposed to pay? This is a perfect analogy. So who's supposed to carry the damage or pay for the damage? Is it your pocket, your loss? Does the airline owe you anything? Same thing with the fields. So is it in Hebrew, makat medina, happened, the drought encompasses everybody. And then I think Rashi says, the interpretation goes, well, since it everybody's mazal, then you split the cost, you split the damage. You pay a little less and the renter or the owner gets a little less. But if, this is interesting, if it happened only in that particular patch, on that field, nobody else, then it's your mazal, your bad luck, you pay. So, to tongue-in-cheek, I call this whole topic, whose mazal is it? The truth of astrology, and I'm going to conclude here, the truth of astrology that we say in regular, ordinary language, we say, it takes two to tango. It's never one side. And you see it a lot when you deal with people's interaction. Who is responsible? Who started the fight? Who caused the damage to whom? It takes two to tango. We're all involved. So we're all in the same boat. I will conclude by my own personal words and with a little preface to that. One of the best arguments that I have seen that supports astrology, not opposes it. There are a few others, I cannot take the time for this, but one of the best arguments that supports astrology is a theological one and a distinct Jewish one. And that is that in Hebrew or in Judaism, you're not supposed to pray in vain. It's called tefillat shav. Tefillat shav is when you pray for something that's not possible, since it will never happen. You cannot pray for someone to come back from the dead. So tefillat shav, you're not supposed to pray for what's not possible. And the argument goes that by studying the writings of the heaven, or the book of the heavens, it helps you to know what's possible, so you don't pray in vain. Not everybody will agree with that, but that's how I live my life. I don't pray in vain. I know what's possible for me. I count my blessings every day, and I know how far I can go. And when I try to go further and it's blocked, I know, okay, that's my mazal, and I know not to get frustrated, not to get annoyed. It gives you a lot of peace of mind. You have no idea how much peace of mind you get from that. I teach it to my daughters, I'm beginning to teach it to my grandchildren because they are becoming of age. It's one of the greatest things that happened to me personally. It's a gift from the universe, and I hope that you or people you love will also get that gift. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I have learned, I gotta be careful using the word muscle from here on in. For one thing, and your example of the airlines pulled us very much into contemporary world and what happened from the colonists from ancient world to today. Now, Mahira will answer a few questions,
yeah.
Please.